What's up, folks? Welcome to episode 9 of the Adjacent Hex podcast. My name is Zach, and joining me again from the next available blank board space is Doug. How's it going, my friend?
Things are going well. How are you?
Hanging in there. Let's get right to it. I'm not gonna cut right to the chase. What have you been playing this month?
I've been playing actually quite a bit.
Oh yeah.
Some of the older stuff I've played and talked about before. Fantasy Frontier.
Mm-hmm.
The Gamelin games. Blimp.
Oh
Discovery,
yeah.
Combat. Tile laying game.
Yeah, I really like that one. We played that a couple months
got
ago.
Got a good game of that in. Although I screwed up one of the rules and it made the game go on for about an hour longer than it should have. Got a game of Machikoro in.
Oh, good one, good one. I play that with the students now.
Yeah, that's a great game. Nice and quick, 30-minute game. I got to play with the fifth player expansion.
I don't think I've done that yet.
It's cool. It changes because just the dynamic, what things people are buying. Yeah, it was fun. Good game. It had that same thing, though, that I've noticed. I actually warned because 3 of the 5 players were new, and... Mm-hmm. I've seen this happen where people are building their cities, and they're forgetting that the objective is just to flip over those cards.
Yeah, you know, it is one of those games that like you can kind of get carried away with just performing the actions that are inherent in the game, where the economy mandates that you buy cards.
Yeah.
But the game conditions mandate that you flip over your special cards.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, and the same, I ended up winning because mm-hmm. I had flipped over my cards, and most people had flipped over 1, maybe 2, because I just kept my eye on the prize, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, well, when you're the only one who is at present aware that that's the win condition, it becomes almost one-sided.
And I warned people ahead of time. I said, I've seen new players do this. They get so involved in building their engine, they forget to flip these extra cards, but whatever.
Well, and at some point, the extra cards, once you unlock that second die, the mm-hmm. extra cards become something you almost don't want to do because it feels like you're almost wasting your turn.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, it can depend on what other people are buying and stuff. It's really... I bought a bunch of the farms.
Mm-hmm.
And people rolled an insane amount of 2s, and I just raked it in and just ran away with it. Completely lucky.
Refresh my memory, is that 2-on-2 dice, or just a 2?
Two on one die.
Right, so you have a potential of triggering that farm twice in a turn.
Yeah, it was... Yeah. Well, more than that, up to 5 times.
Right, well, right.
Because it's clocked on anybody.
On any one player's turn.
Yeah,
that's... That can be pretty devastating to your opponents.
And it was just pure luck, but...
Oh, of course.
My number kept coming up, as they say. Mm-hmm. Another one I got to play. We both played. We were both in this same game, and it was your first time playing, I think. Bang?
Yes, that was my first time playing. And, you know, it was the end of a board game day. I had played a couple of games before that, and also, you know, having to work that day at the store as well. I was a little tired, so my head wasn't in it completely, but I gotta tell you, I had fun. Like, I would definitely play it again.
Yeah, it's a fun game. I think, being the end of the day, one of the players at our table was taking a long time with their action, or their decisions.
Mm-hmm.
The other time I played Bang, that didn't really happen. It was very fast-paced. There were new players, and people were getting slowed down a little bit.
And we were also, I mean, like I said, it was the end of the day.
Yeah.
So people were coming and going, and you know, people wanted to say goodbye or hello to other people. So people were distracted.
Yeah.
Noticeably. Yeah. And that's, you know, that slowed it down a little bit too. But it still held my attention enough that, like, I didn't pull my phone out. I didn't, you know, start fidgeting with mm-hmm, my cards mm-hmm. more
and
than
it was,
I do anyway.
Yeah, it was definitely a good time too. Like, I got a bunch of good laughs out of it.
Absolutely. You know?
A bunch of, why are you shooting me and not that guy?
Yeah, I mean, really, it doesn't get you into the sort of mindset of, like, deduction the way that a game like Resistance does. But it's almost a secondary goal to try and figure out who's who.
You know, I agree with you in the game that you and I played.
Mm-hmm.
The game before that, like, this game, people just started shooting each other right out of the gate. Not even knowing who they were. Like, you could be shooting your own teammate. Mm-hmm. The other game I played wasn't really like that. People were kind of building their, you know, equipment up and sort of eyeing and seeing what people did. It was a little more deductive than the one you and I played.
So I really like that it's versatile in that way.
Huh. I guess, yeah, I mean, that was just like a crazy shootout. It was bizarre.
And I mean, that's how I kind of, what's the word?
Imagined?
Yeah, I was gonna go with glorify the Wild West.
Oh. I mean,
what you see is, you know, I don't watch many Westerns. Mm-hmm. I think the closest thing I've ever watched to a Western is like Blazing Saddles.
You've never seen the Clint Eastwood?
Like, I've seen the Clint Eastwood stuff, but nothing like, nothing that sticks out in my mind as well as Blazing Saddles or like Firefly is widely considered a space Western.
Mm-hmm.
But I sort of get sort of drawn into the take a couple steps, turn around and draw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Have you heard of the game Flick 'Em Up?
I have not.
It's a dexterity game, and it's basically a Wild West shootout.
Oh, nice.
It's kind of describing what you're talking about.
And, of course, I'm also looking forward to Tiny Epic Western.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Which we mentioned last month. But,
of course.
Yeah.
Another game, you were saying it was the end of the day, and you had come from playing other stuff. One of those games was a game I actually went home and bought. Bottom of the Ninth.
Oh, I'm glad you picked that one up.
Oh, right away. That game was so awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's a quick, just filler game that we've talked about before, you know, in brief.
Mm-hmm.
But you can bust it out and play it with anybody. It doesn't matter if they're really a baseball fan, which really is what led me down a path this month of starting to look at what I play
mm-hmm.
and comparing it to A, my personality, and B, you know, just like, am I repeating myself too much? And it brought on the concept to me of the myth behind there is a complete collection. Like, I don't think such a thing exists.
The myth of the complete collection. Well, that's crazy. I mean, the stuff that I played, even in that, I got to play Manhattan Project.
Oh, yeah.
Which I like you've that game played quite a before.
Lot. In fact, I own that game, yeah.
See, it's out of print. Mm-hmm. But I had an hour. Josh, our friend who we've mentioned on the show before, sat me down. We basically went through the rules, played a couple turns to get a good idea how it worked. Mm-hmm. Very Euro-y.
Yeah, very much so.
Very much so. And then on the other end of the, like that being such a Euro game, another mm-hmm. end of the spectrum, I got to play Blood Rage.
Oh, you know, I'm glad that you brought up Blood Rage because... one of the ones I want to talk about is by the same company. So explain Blood Rage to us.
Yeah, well, Blood Rage, it's kind of very popular right now. It's getting a lot of 9 and 10s from critics and reviewers and whatnot. So essentially, it's a little bit of area control. Everybody's a Viking clan, and the world is coming to an end, and you're fighting for control of all these different areas.
Now, when you say Viking, do you mean like Eric the Red kind of thing, or more like a Thor?
I'm going to say yes to both. Okay, I mean, it kind of mixes. Like, the land is all fake, but there are gods and there are expansions and you can add. And there's like Odin and Thor and Loki and other gods, and they all do different... Like, their cards have consistent themes. Like, Loki can be, if you die... You know, normally when you fight... You win a battle, you get a bunch of victory points. They're called glory. And Loki is kind of, if you lose your men, if you lose the battle, you can gain a bunch of victory points. So you can go into battle intentionally trying to lose. You know, the other person doesn't know that. It's got a card drafting mechanic. You play it over 3 rounds. It's really fun. It was really interesting. It was really cool. There's a million different ways to get points and victories. Mm-hmm. You can do quests, you can win fights, you can lose fights intentionally. You know, you can have points for guys that leave Valhalla, because when a soldier dies, they go to Valhalla and you get them back the next round. You can get cards that give you points for that. You can give cards that give you extra points for losing your ships, or you can get cards that give you extra points for, you know, every soldier that dies in battle. Yours or not. Huh.
So, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways to get points. The game is pretty close through most of it. You're leveling up your little clans. You can hire monsters that are yours, uniquely yours. Upgrading leaders, upgrading this, that, and the other thing. It seems I only got to play it once. But very quickly into the game, you can see a lot of depth.
Now, did you pick that game up, or is that someone?
No, that was Corey's game.
Okay.
Corey and Jess, some mutual friends of ours, mm-hmm. Brought it over and we were able to play it.
You know, it's interesting. I've known Corey for a very, very long time. In fact, we went to elementary and middle school and high school together.
Mm-hmm.
And his taste in games is almost predictable. he's the one who got me into Warhammer for the first time. He brought over a bunch of miniatures to the town library of all places, and we played there.
Right.
But I've seen, like, he does very much the competitive science fiction or the competitive fantasy.
Hmm.
Those are his channels. Now, he does play other things, and he's willing to try new things, which is one of the reasons I like gaming with him. But, you know, it's, his quote unquote complete collection, is very, or from what I've seen, very focused on those two channels. And, you know, mine is the same way. I recently played what I consider almost the emotional sequel to Blood Rage. It's called Besieged Sons of the Abyss. It's by the same company.
Cool Mini or not, right?
Yes, it is. And it literally arrived at the store today, and one of our friends and I busted open all the boxes and played it, and we realized that we were playing it wrong.
Well, what should the game be?
Well, we made the mistake of shuffling the expansion cards in with the base decks.
Right away.
And the expansion is, like, it's a distinctly separate entity.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the first game is almost like the first chapter of the story. Mm-hmm. And then the expansion is played after as a second chapter.
Okay. Well, I don't know much about Besieged. I did take a look at it on Board Game Geek. From the pictures, and I was telling you this earlier, it kind of looks like Ghost Stories meets Castle Panic. Is that...
That's a fairly apt description. It's basically, you are some number of heroes, fantasy, you know, characters. You know, you got the dwarf, the elf, the mm-hmm. the bard, the miner, whatever. And your job is to defend the city of Modhelm from oncoming waves of baddies from the Abyss.
And these are fantasy too, orcs, goblins, that sort of stuff.
Well, they're stone golems in the base game, and then the expansion adds orcs and goblins.
Okay.
What I was noticing, and it's works very well. You know, on every turn you get new villains spawning in, and they mm-hmm. and others move forward and attack the city. And if you run out of minis, the big bad comes in. It's the Avatar of the Abyss, and he is very, very deadly and will kill you very quickly. And about halfway through the game, our friend and I realized, why hasn't the Avatar showed up? As a matter of fact, my boss came over and said, why hasn't the Avatar showed up? And we looked through the rules and realized, oh, wait, there should be a lot more carnage going on.
Mm.
There should be a lot more miniatures on the table. Things should be a lot more dire than this.
And just sort of a first playthrough, like, learning curve type mistakes.
We noticed on the cards that in every the game takes place over the course of 4 seasons, 12 months.
Okay.
And we realized that on the card, there are different numbers of each villain that are supposed to spawn every turn.
Ah, okay.
And we were only spawning one.
So you were doing, like, the level one type.
Yeah, it was supposed to be
progressively harder.
Exactly. It was, like, a very, very rudimentary playthrough. But we determined that we learned the basic rules, the basic mechanics of the game. But what I was noticing is my games tend to be, by and large, cooperative.
Yeah, very much so. You like your co-ops.
I really do, and it makes me wonder, am I this way to a fault? One of the other games that I played twice this month was called Dead of Winter, which we've mentioned on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that it's both cooperative and competitive, because everybody has a secret objective, so you have to work together to accomplish the main goal of the game, and then you sort of have to stab each other in the back a little bit to get to accomplish your secret objective. My secret objective today was to hoard gas cans.
Mm-hmm.
And I swindled our friend Jack into giving me all his gas cans. And then I'm like, Jack, I can move around the board easier if I have gas cans. I only have one dude. He's frostbitten already. He's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
But if you give me a gas can, I can get myself around. I can get some medicine. I can heal him up. So Jack's like, okay. And he hands me all his gas cans. And then I just hoard them. And I keep rolling the exposure die. And he's like, why? You're holding gas cans. Why are you rolling the exposure die? I'm like, just don't worry about it.
Had he played before?
He has. It was actually his copy of the game.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering if he's thinking maybe you're the traitor at that point.
Well, you know, he was. Because yeah. I was the traitor last game. But the last time we played, I was the traitor and I got stuck. My goal was to have four heroes all armed with some kind of weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
And my heroes just kept dying.
Yeah.
I couldn't keep them alive to save my life.
That's the way that game is. Sometimes it just doesn't go your way. But it is interesting that you bring up the fact that you have so many co-ops. A buddy of mine, John, came over and we played the game Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
The racing game. Have you ever played that?
I haven't.
I absolutely crushed it.
Oh, yeah?
I won by a million billion points. Completely lucky. I had the black ship, and I was calling it the Black Pearl. I was doing the whole... I was quoting Pirates of the Caribbean like an idiot every 5 minutes.
Well, you know, like you do.
Well, you move around and everybody... You roll the dice and there's two numbers, and then the person whose turn it is gets to pick the night and the day. And then everybody's got these cards and there's a night and day action. And so your night action... Or your day action could be move. And so whatever the one die number is, you're going to move that much. And your second action could be collect gold or food or cannons, whatever the resource might be.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first person has a little bit of an advantage because they can match it to the card they want to play. Well, and then you can do combat, like pirate combat. It's one race around the island or one lap around the island. Mm-hmm. First one across, you get victory points, this, that. But you can battle each other. And there's a starburst symbol on a 10-sided die.
Huh.
And I got into 5 combats and rolled that symbol 4 times. And it's an auto-win symbol.
Ooh.
So, like, I mean, it was completely luck, but I just crushed. It was kind of awesome. But, I mean, even if I hadn't, it was so much fun just playing. But the reason I bring the game up is actually the conversation we had after the game about racing games, and John and I were talking about how you kind of only need one racing game,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, if I have Jamaica, I don't need Formula D, or I don't need whatever something else might be, because it's ultimately, there could be slight variations here and there, and some games could be better than the other, but if I have, how many racing games, pure racing games, one lap around the board, am I going to get to the table?
That's my problem too. Like, I have the other game that I played this month and won finally was Pandemic the Cure, which is also a cooperative game. And I bring all these cooperative games to Board Game Day, let's say, and does it decrease people's willingness to play games that I've brought, because they're predictable, and a lot of the people that we play with, at least, they would prefer to be competitive about things.
That's interesting. I don't know if it would, like, from a personal level, I don't know if it would cause me to not want to play another co-op game, but in my own collection, and I've come across this before, like, especially when I was first starting out, I would be like, okay, here is my solid Euro game, and here is my straight-up Ameritrash combat game, and here is my Lovecraft horror game, here's my fantasy game, and on and on and on, and I'm trying to fit theme and mechanic, and I'm like, okay, once I get this game, I won't need to do that anymore. But I find, like, that is, it's, again, it goes back to that myth of the complete collection, because especially right now, so many different themes and different mechanics and combinations of mechanics and combinations of mechanics and themes and on and on, I'm constantly wanting to get new stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I've collected other things in the past, and you know, things will be complete. It, like Magic cards, prime example. If I have this set, my set of this block is complete. There is a definitive feeling of completion in that point. Whereas with board games, you know, I have cooperative games. I have competitive games. I have worker placement games. I have dice chucker games. I have, you know, what have you. And I look on Kickstarter on, you know, in fact, it's probably the bane of my existence, honestly, because I look on Kickstarter. I'm like, oh, well, this takes a one of my favorite aspects of a deck building game and combines it with, you know, a worker placement. And, you know, I immediately had to buy that game.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, even like Blood Rage that I mentioned before, it's that game has combat. It's got drafting. It's got area control. Like, these are all... I have games that do drafting. I have games that are combat. I have games that are area control. But I don't have a game that does all of those at once.
Exactly, and that's...
Plus with a Viking theme.
Right, right.
You know?
And my first game that was out of the ordinary... I mean, I played oodles of Monopoly and plenty of Parcheesi and stuff growing up, but like my first game that was decidedly out of the ordinary for me was a game called Scrawl. We've mentioned it a couple times on the show. It is out of print, but it came from Gen Con, I believe, in 2004 or 2005, and it was mind-blowing because I'd never seen hexagonal tiles before. First of all, it was Vikings in space.
Yeah, right.
And who can honestly say, oh yeah, I don't want that. Like, that just seems so cool to me. And now I look at things like that, and Besieged, here's a cooperative game with these really cool minis.
Yeah, the minis are cool.
It's in the name. That, you know, that those are some of my favorite things. I love painting minis. I've played Warhammer for years, and I was looking for something new to paint. Although I've gotten to the point now where I don't know if I am going to paint the Besieged minis.
Just too far behind the painting?
I'm just so far behind in painting. and it's cooperative, which is something I obviously like, because I've mentioned my collection is predominantly cooperative games. But also, you know, it's you're building something up. There's a currency, you know, mechanic in it. It's not a worker placement currency, which is probably my favorite way of earning resources, but you know, it's a little bit different, which I like, and so I immediately had to back it for however much ridiculous amount of money I had to pay for it.
Well, that's interesting too, because, you know, you want the diversification, but at the same time, if you're gonna play all these games and you like co-ops, I mean, do you want to spend money on games you're not gonna like as much just because when somebody might come over, you know, it'll give them a better option? I don't know.
And that's a really good question, you know, because I look at games from what I want to play, and I think that's what most gamers do, is, you know, what do I want to see hit the table?
Well, it's interesting, too, when I was getting back into The Hobbit, like, when I first started when I was first getting back into the hobby, I was buying specifically two-player games, because it was only Jesse and I. You know, and so now I look at my collection, and I've got probably a dozen only two-player games.
Right.
You know, I don't have an action. In fact, we just got one. We just picked up Twilight Struggle. Jesse bought it. It was number two on Board Game Games. She really liked the theme. It was awesome. It says about a three-hour playtime, just so people know. A lot of text, a lot of reading. We actually screwed up the first round in the setup. Had to reset and then played again, and in a three-hour span, we only got about halfway through the game, because it plays 10 rounds. We got through round five or six, I think round five, and then we called it. But it was awesome. I'm very excited to get it back to the table. But when we first started, I was looking at just these two-player games, and then as I kind of started branching out, I actually started thinking, if I have game X and I have game Y and I want both of them, which one's going to get to the table? What do other people want to play? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I've started thinking that way too, via kind of the same channel. Mm-hmm. You know, but I've started paying attention to what designers and developers do I trust? What companies do I trust?
Yeah.
And what are they making that's going to make me happy, but have people willing to play it? And we mentioned last month the game Scythe that's coming out from Stonemaier Games. And, I mean, we've played a number of Stonemaier products at this point, Viticulture, Euphoria, etc. And, you know, so we trust that company. They make a good product. They back it really well. So that was an easy grab for me. At the same time, the theme is fantastic.
Well, here's the thing about that, though. Like, Scythe is a great example. Because I splurged in a way I don't normally do when I got, like, the big version on Kickstarter.
Yeah, same.
Everything but the art book, essentially. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. If I didn't think that game was ever going to hit the table, it could be my favorite game in the world. I'm still not going to spend that money. You know what I mean? Because it's not worth it if nobody else is going to play it. So on one hand, we've got you want to buy the games that you really want to play, and then you kind of have to weigh in, I guess, your gaming group. Are they also going to want to play? And then if it's not a big hit, you buy another game and your collection gets bigger.
Right, exactly. And you know, we've all done that plenty of times. I mean, I bought, there was a big sale at one of our favorite stores, Jetpack Comics. We mentioned them before. And I picked up Roll for the Galaxy, which, you know, I liked Race for the Galaxy the first time I played it, but I haven't hit the table with Roll for the Galaxy yet. I've played it. I played someone else's copy. But it's like, I know that it's not something that our gaming group is going to, you know, that it's not, it doesn't really appeal to them, that sort of style of game. So it's been kind of just another one on my collection. Now I know people who will play it with me.
Right.
But it's just a matter of getting those people to the table. So I think that's something you need to consider when you're looking at your collection as well, is, you know, how frequently do you see person X who is going to play game Y?
Yeah.
And is it worth the price? Now, when the game, you know, is on super sale and you can get a game that's as big as Roll for the Galaxy for like $20, you go for it. You pull that trigger.
Right. Well, that's really interesting, too, because, we're going back to that myth of the complete collection. And it's sort of, even this conversation, like, as it's evolving, it sort of started, like, what games do you like? Okay, I like game X, Y, and Z. I like Mechanic 1, 2, 3. I've got all that covered in my shelf. But now we're actually talking about, sure, like, X, Y, and Z, but if game W is going to be really popular among the group, now we're actually talking about, in a limited sense, at least, buying games because other people are going to like them. And so have you ever done that? Have you ever bought a game that you didn't really like, but you knew it would get to the table and other people would enjoy it? And you like it enough to play, but not, it wouldn't be something you bought if everybody else didn't love it.
Is absolutely.
That, you have?
Yes, absolutely. I'm looking at a couple right now. We had a joke early on in the show, you know, does anybody want to buy a copy of Boss Monster? Well, yes, I did. I bought Boss Monster.
Okay.
And I enjoy it. It's fine. But, you know, I play it because other people are interested in playing it. I have a couple of students who love it. And so it's easy for me to just, you know, if we've got a study hall or an indoor recess or something like that, I can bust out Boss Monster. And the kids will play it with me. The same, you know, holds true to a lesser extent with Star Realms. I enjoy Star Realms. It's a great game. But, you know, it's not my favorite. But I know people who are going to play it. So I'll play Star Realms, no problem.
Well, that's interesting then.
Too. Right. Have you ever, you know, bought a game that you just instantly, you just regret because you just bought it and you're like, oh, wait, what was I doing? What was I thinking?
You know, I don't really know if I do because I'm kind of insane and I very rarely do impulse buys. You know what I mean? Like, I struggle over every single game purchase. Unless it's like you said, it's on my list. It was already on my radar, and it's on super sale for $20-$30, and it's normally an $80 game or whatever. And I can pull the trigger, you know, guilt-free. But I agonize over every purchase. It's really, I don't know if it's strange. I don't think it's unique to me, but it's kind of, I'm always considering, when I'm buying a game, what games am I not buying? Is this game going to get to the table? Is the other game going to get to the table more? Which one am I going to like? Which one is the group? And I just tie myself in knots, and then I buy the game I want.
Yeah, and that's why I bring up that question. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever done that. I know people who have, but I don't think I've ever done that. Because I'm like you. I sit and I hem and I haw, and I'll star a Kickstarter, and I'll talk to people about it. You know, how do you feel about this? Would you play this? Would I play this? Do I like the theme? Do I like the mechanics? And I mean, most of the time, I just let the Kickstarters pass. Yeah, I back a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, even recently, you and I backed a game, Karmica.
Mm-hmm.
Karmica on Kickstarter. It was one of three games. It was Tiny Epic Westerns, Karmica, and I forget the third one. But I was between those three.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the deciding factors not to get Westerns was because both you and Eric got it.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think Corey might have gotten it too.
Yeah, I think pretty much everybody around us did. But and that was actually a big thing. I don't need to spend my money there if I'm still going to be able to play it. Can I tell you, though, you asked, have I instantly regretted getting a game?
Oh, no. I guess instantly is a weird question.
No, but either way, I have games that I've enjoyed playing, and then later on decide that they're just not fitting. They're not hitting the table enough, and that sort. So even games that I enjoy, I will get rid of, I'll sell. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a constant flux. It's really, yeah. I don't sell a lot of games, but I do have maybe three on my shelf right now that I'm seriously considering either tossing up on BGG or eBay. Just a change in the collection again.
Yeah, and that's the great thing about a collection like this is it is in a constant state of flux, because unlike Magic, where you're building a deck, mm-hmm. and it rotates out, but you can keep some of the cards or something like that. Board games, if you sell one, it's here is, or if you buy one secondhand, here is a whole game.
Mm-hmm.
You can play it, and then if you don't like it, you can sell it off yourself.
Yeah, and what's interesting, I mean, and these games, even if people are like, "What's wrong with them?" Nothing. I actually really like the game. I just
mm-hmm.
never get to play it. Why take up space on the shelf? I'll let somebody else enjoy it. Because I don't do that with anything else. I don't do that with comic books. I don't do that with movies. I don't do that with CDs or whatever else you could collect. Board games are really the only thing that I've had and sort of flipped.
I think it's really important to sometimes occasionally take some time and just think critically about what you're playing and what you're buying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a really good way to look at where to take a collection, how to build oneself as a gamer, and develop a gaming group as well. And we'll talk more about those things in later episodes. But for now, if you want to check out some of the later episodes of this, earlier episodes of this podcast,
or later, it depends on when you hear this.
Yeah. If you want to check out some of the older episodes of this podcast and some of our other work, head over to facebook.com/anotherletdown. Big thanks to our editor, Jody Wagner.
Thank you, Jody.
Podcast just does not happen without her. She is a wonderful, wonderful editor. If you have some more feedback for us, you can reach us on Twitter. My name is at DENONCZD, and Doug is at ITSOKTOLAFF. If you have something a bit longer to say to us, feel free to send us an email at adjacenthex@anotherletdown.com. We've also started playing some of our games live on Twitch, and I'm working on building a board game streaming rig.
I'm going to be excited. I am excited about that.
Yeah. We have a couple of designs in mind, so hopefully that'll be happening soon. But right now we're just playing digital versions of games, which are also a lot of fun. We broadcast just about every other Saturday at twitch.tv/anotherletdown. Anyway, from all of us here at Adjacent Hex, happy gaming, and we will talk to you next month.
Awesome. Hey, you want to buy a copy of Crossmaster Arena?
It's always got to be one, doesn't there?